Okay, so without further ado, we would like to invite our guest speaker for tonight. He is from the United Kingdom, but he calls the city of Qom his home. Our very own Sheikh Muzaffar Haider, who is going to speak to us about the subject of the power of tabligh. Let's go ahead and give him a warm welcome with a salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والضحى والليل إذا سجى ما ودعك ربك وما قلى وللآخرة خير لك من الأولى ولسوف يعطيك ربك فترضى ألم يجدك يتيما فآوى ووجدك ضالا فهدى ووجدك عائلا فأغنى فأما اليتيم فلا تقهر وأما السائل فلا تنهر وأما بنعمة ربك فحدث صدق الله العلي العظيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين سيما بقية الله في الأرضين رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. My dear brothers and sisters, respected elders, respected fellow Hawza students, senior طلاب, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. I'd like to start by thanking Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for this golden opportunity and thanking the honorable organizers of this event, the SOQ. I see in front of me many honorable faces, and it's an honor, truly, and a privilege to be speaking in front of you. I see seniors who have much more knowledge and are much more pious, and I see a lot of youths, a lot of my juniors, who are far, far purer. I'd like to start with your permission. وَبِإِذْنِ اللَّهِ وَبِإِذْنِ الرَّسُولِ. The hadith that I'd like to begin the discussion today with is from Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, who said, soon Kufa will become empty of the believers, and knowledge will leave Kufa as a snake goes out of its lair. Then the knowledge will appear in a land called Qum. It will become the center of knowledge and merits. No one, not even the women at home, will be unaware of the religion of God. This will be close to the time of the reappearance of our Hujjat al-Qa'im al-Mahdi. Now, if the Imam alayhi salam has said something, it is going to happen with or without us. The Holy Quran says, هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على دين كله. It is He, Allah, who sent the messenger with guidance and the religion of truth, that it may manifest over all other religions. The only question is, what role will you and I play in the spreading of this knowledge? Therein, the idea of tabligh comes into the picture. Now, when I say tabligh, we will often assume that we're talking about traditional tabligh. What do I mean by traditional tabligh? Well, it's precisely this, what we're doing right now, from the minbar. The type of tabligh which has been done throughout the years. Imam Khamenei said that this is one of the forms of the best types of tabligh. However, it is important for us to not limit tabligh to just that. Look at the hadith again. It says that everybody in the world will become aware of the religion of Islam, even the women at home. Question: is traditional tabligh targeting those women at home alone? If that's what we're doing, we should be a little bit worried. That's not what traditional tabligh is doing. No. We have to assume that those women at home, alone, across the world, have some other means through which the knowledge of Islam can reach them. And as we know, women generally in the world have phones in their pockets, have laptops on their desks, or sitting in front of a screen. If there is a sister who is watching this online right now, you should know, dear sister, you are part of the fulfillment of this prophecy. And so, when we say tabligh in today's discussion, we will be talking about all forms of propagation. All forms of propagation, which every single person who is listening, whether young or old, whether brother or sister, whether you consider yourself as a Hawzawi, as a scholar or not, can engage in. I'm talking about leaflets, I'm talking about social media, university societies, movies, articles, whatever it takes to get the message of Islam out there. I want each and every one of us to imagine you have a truck and you are the driver of your truck. Now, this truck carries water. The water that your truck carries represents your knowledge of Islam. The more knowledge you have, the more water your truck will contain. Some people might have a very little amount of knowledge and so they only have a bottle of water. Some people might have a great amount of knowledge and so they have tanks full of water. Now, the idea is that you need to get this water to a faraway land where the people are thirsty. Now, some may choose to drive the entire way and it might take long, but that's okay because it's steady. It's reliable. Some people might choose to go in a slightly different direction and go to the airport and take a plane to get this water to where it needs to reach. Some people might choose to take a train. Some people might choose to take a boat. But whatever means through which you want to deliver this water through is irrelevant because all four of the tires of this wheel are punctured. You're not going anywhere. And when it comes to tabligh in today's world, we are going at a snail's pace. We're going very slowly. Why? Because all four of the tires are punctured. In order to effectively do tabligh out there, we need to address all four of these wheels and make sure that they are fully working. So wheel number one raises the question, is there a genuine deficiency and confusion in the Shia world when it comes to tabligh? Wheel number two, ask the question, what light does the Quran and Sunnah shed on the idea of tabligh? Wheel number three raises the question, how does fear play a fundamental role in shaping the way that we do tabligh? And the fourth and final wheel raises the question, how can you unlock your greatest potential through tabligh? So let's first go to that first wheel and ask the question, is there a genuine deficiency and confusion when it comes to tabligh in the Shia world? Before we come to Hawza, many of us might have noticed that the Shia communities out there are in a strange kind of taqiyya mode. What do I mean by this? When you look at Sunni masjids, especially in places like London, you'll see that they have beautiful domes on top of them. The doors are glass, wide open, inviting, warm, friendly. There'll usually be a big bearded brother outside handing out leaflets, smiling at the people, doing dawah, inviting them towards Islam. When you go to the Shia masjid or Imam Barga, generally speaking, you go to some basement somewhere, the windows are all boarded up. Inviting somebody from the outside, God forbid. We can't let outsiders in here. There's not no warm and friendly environment. You ask these same Shia communities, what are you doing out there in the West? What is your duty? They say, well, we have freedom of expression here in the West. Really? Are you using it? The problem is that some are using that freedom of expression, but they tend to be those who we refer to as Tashayyu'i Inglisi, British Shiaism, and they're spreading nothing but discord, fitna, disunity in the name of Islam. And we know that that version of Shiaism which is being spread is only a distorted and warped version. It is not the pure Muhammadan Islam of the Quran and Ahlul Bayt. It's not. And so, and this is before we come to the Hawza, we recognize that we have the best religion in the world, dare I say it, the worst tabligh. You look at Bollywood. Bollywood is a fascinating and powerful instrument and institution for tabligh. And it's predominantly run by Hindus. Don't be surprised if we take our children to watch a Bollywood movie and they leave that movie chanting Om Shanti Om. Similarly, Hollywood, a powerful institution for tabligh, run predominantly by Zionist Jews. Don't be surprised if we take our children to Hollywood movies and they walk away from that kind of media, liking and endorsing Western culture and getting their hearts attached to things like Halloween, things like Christmas, and Western culture generally, and changing their lifestyles. You go and look at the evangelical Christians. They have enormous studios. In a single setting, they will reach 100,000 people, perhaps millions, more than that, in a single platform. Similarly with the Takfiri Wahhabis, you'll see they have a similar system. They are experts at creating personalities who the public get their hearts attached to. And then they start to trust those personalities. Even Jehovah's Witnesses. For those who don't know, Jehovah's Witnesses are a sect of Christianity. And their tabligh model is basically to go throughout neighborhoods, go to each and every door, knocking, 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 and saying, "Hi there, do you have a moment to speak about your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ?" And you can have great experiences with them. You invite them inside, you have a cup of tea, they talk about the Prophet Jesus from the perspective of the Bible, you talk about Jesus from the perspective of the Quran. We make fun out of the Jehovah's Witnesses. It's a running joke in Western media. Jehovah's Witnesses, look at them, they're annoying, they're irritating, they come knocking on my door, I don't open the doors to them. But hold on a moment. They have such an effective method of tabligh that they have become a world famous phenomenon. Even a celebrity like Michael Jackson adopted the Jehovah's Witnesses sect because of this mode of tabligh. Now, if you even suggest to Shia Mu'mineen out there, imagine if you suggested it, why don't we, in the month of Muharram, for example, go to doors of random people and talk about Imam Hussein alayhi salam? Or why don't we go and knock on random doors and talk about the Quran? I'm assuming the immediate response would be, no way. That's going to create fitna. That's going to create chaos. That's going to create confusion. That's dangerous. This is that same freedom of expression that we're talking about. You see how useful it is? This is all before we come to the Hawza. When you come to the Hawza, unfortunately, you realize that part of the problem is actually stemming from right here. You go back in time, the Hawza produced remarkable and influential individuals like Shaheed Shushtari. If today in India and Pakistan we have the biggest populations of the Shias outside of Iran, and they are lovers of the Ahlul Bayt, lovers of Imam Ali alayhi salam, it is attributed to such great muballighin as Shaheed Shushtari. You come to our time, and the leader of the Muslims has to say, Hawza bayad inqilabi bemonad. The Hawza must remain revolutionary. I want to give you a short example here. It's a personal example of what's happening in the Hawza. There was a brother. He was an atheist. No attachment to the religion. No belief in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He starts watching Shaheed Malcolm X. He starts reading about Shaheed Malcolm X. He becomes impassioned. He becomes inspired. He becomes a Muslim. Not only that, he becomes Shia, revolutionary. He comes to the Hawza and he comes here full of energy, full of passion, ready to do whatever it takes to strengthen the cause of Islam out there. When he comes here, he encounters a certain individual who tells him, no. This is not our way. Chirag khamosh, you've got to switch off your light. Go under the radar. Don't get noticed. Don't ruffle any feathers. The brother now comes and he's talking to me about this. And he says, this is how we should be. Why are we talking about Islam? Why are we talking about the revolution? We shouldn't be talking about Imam Khamenei out there. I said to him, brother, you used to be atheist? He says, yes. I say, when you were an atheist, who inspired you to become a Muslim in the first place? He said, Shaheed Malcolm X. I said, Shaheed Malcolm X, was he the kind of chirag khamosh, under the radar kind of brother? Was he quiet, not ruffling any feathers, not creating any controversies? Or is he the kind of brother who was out there in the streets, handing out leaflets, talking to the masses, using the media to its maximum potential back then, to the point where the enemies became frustrated by him and riddled him with bullets and made him Shaheed? The brother says, you're right. It was Shaheed Malcolm who inspired me. And these are the words of the brother himself. He said, when I came to the Hawza, I had a fire in my heart. These such individuals stole my fire. And I have to say, this is just one example and there are many, many more. And these kinds of sentiments are coming predominantly from Westerners and from those who are somehow affiliated to or attached to the West, predominantly, although it's in other places too. And they say things like protesting has no effect. Media is useless. And I'm saying this, dear brothers and sisters, respected elders, because I myself, being a brother who was born and raised in the West and then came to the Hawza, I myself just recently was a victim to this kind of confusion. Just study. Don't do any tabligh. Dar hali ke the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, said that everything has a zakat, and the zakat of knowledge is to share it. How can you expect to have any barakah in your knowledge if you're not paying the zakat on it, if you're not sharing it with others? And yet we're constantly told here in the Hawza, unfortunately by certain individuals, tabligh is secondary, tabligh comes after. Tabligh is not to be done simultaneously and alongside your studies. And while it does make sense, you need to have knowledge first before you can share it. However, it's gotten to a point where many of the brothers have actually forgotten the reason and the purpose for why we came to the Hawza in the first place. You talk to some brothers, why did you come to the Hawza? They openly say, I came here for nothing and no one except for me. I came here for my own personal spiritual development and progression. And while on the onset that might sound like something very wise, it's not. It's actually quite selfish. That's like your truck being full of water and you are accumulating more and more water with no intentional effort to get the water out to those who are dying of thirst out there. Imam Khamenei, the leader, said, Deen Islam, Deen Tabligh Ast. The religion of Islam is a religion of Tabligh. And so now we come to the second wheel. What light does the Quran and Sunnah really shed on the concept of tabligh? The first thing that I want to mention here is that the Prophet is Uswatun Hasana. He is the best example for us. There are many people who, even when we do approach tabligh, we approach it in such a manner. We say, how can I do this without upsetting anyone? We do everything that we can to beat around the bush. There is a main subject that needs to be oppressed, that needs to be addressed here, and yet we don't bring that up. Islam teaches us to be straight up, Shaheed Mutahhari taught us present Islam the way it is. The Holy Quran says, Ya ayyuhar rasool, balligh ma unzila ilayka min rabbik, wa in lam taf'al, fama ballaghta risalata. It says, O messenger, announce that which has been revealed to you by your Lord. And if you don't announce it, it is as if you haven't announced your risala at all. There's a main thing that we need to address, and we're not doing it. We're beating around the bush. But the main point I want us to focus on here is that Allah says, وَاللَّهُ يَعَصِّمُكَ مِنَ النَّاسِ. Allah will protect you from the people. Now make a comparison. The Holy Prophet's tabligh was such that Allah himself has to tell him, don't worry, I will protect you from the people. The Prophet's tabligh led to rejection, it led to persecution, it led to imprisonment, it led to banishment. On the other hand, our tabligh usually leads to a pat on the back, mashallah, you did a good job, maybe some worldly reward. I'm just asking us to make a comparison here. We don't take that same path that the Prophet is taking in his tabligh, and we expect to have the same or similar results. It's strange, really. Sometimes we go into tabligh with a completely wrong attitude. We say to ourselves, what's the point? They're not going to listen. My words are falling on deaf ears. They're not going to understand. There's no point. Islam teaches us, فَذَكِّرْ, the Quran says, فَذَكِّرْ إِنَّ فَعَتَ الذِّكْرَى سَيَذَكَّرُ مَنْ يَخْشَى وَيَتَجَنَّبُهَا الْأَشْقَى. It says, remind them. Surely the reminding benefits. As for the one who wishes to listen, the one who fears, he will understand. As for the one who never wanted to listen in the first place, don't worry about him. Don't worry about him at all. Sometimes we tell ourselves the people are not ready. Why should we say these things when people are not ready to hear them? Is our duty to just keep on waiting or no? Is our duty to just present Islam to them? Imam Ridha alayhi salam, in a beautiful hadith, he says, Rahim Allahu abadan. May Allah have mercy upon the servant who ahya amrana, who makes alive our amr. The Imam is asked, Ya Imam, how do we make your amr alive? He says, teach the people, spread the message of Islam, do tabligh. And then he says, فَإِنَّ النَّاسَ لَوْ عَلِمُوا مَحَاسِنَ كَلَامِنَا لَأَتَّبِعُونَ. He says, look at the pain of the Ahlul Bayt here. Look at the pain. He says, if only the people knew the goodness of our words, they would certainly follow us. Dear brothers and sisters, respected elders, we should have no doubts that if the people out there, and I'm talking about the masses, if they just knew the beauty of this Islam, they would certainly follow it. If you present people with a dirty glass of water, and that's all they have access to, they will drink it because they have nothing else to drink. But if you present people with a dirty glass of water, and in the other side, a pure, clean, crystal glass of water, the sensible people will definitely choose that option. Therein lies the premise that we need to just simply present Islam in a clear manner. The Holy Quran teaches us, وَمَا عَلَى الرَّسُولِ إِلَّا الْبَلَاغُ الْمُبِينَ. There is nothing upon the messenger except the clear deliverance of the message. Sometimes in our tabligh, we need to look at our audiences. Let's compare our target audiences a moment to the target audiences of the Prophet, and we'll see that there's actually a glaring difference. The Prophet's tabligh predominantly targeted everyone, but it included the youths. It included the downtrodden, the oppressed, the poor segments of society. A lot of the time, our tabligh is simply targeting the highest bidder. It's simply targeting whichever community can give me the most comfort, the most respect. Our tabligh Istishira ithna ashari. In other words, generally speaking, we are preaching to the choir. We're going to people who are Shia Muslim, usually from birth, and we're telling them, Imam Ali is your Mawla, regurgitating over and over and over again. The Prophet's tabligh was to the masses, the non-Muslims, those who did not know about Islam, and that is the seerah of the Ahlul Bayt thereafter also that we see. Now, with all of this in mind, dear brothers, respected elders, and I mean this in the most sincerity, how much time do we spend on studies versus how much time do we spend on tabligh? If we spend 1 hour, 2 hours, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours a day on studying, do we spend even 1 hour on tabligh? 1 hour? Is it 50-50? Is it 90-10? Are we giving tabligh any importance at all? We have to ask ourselves. And again, I have to emphasize, when I say tabligh, it's not necessarily traditional tabligh. I mean, how much time are we spending engaging with the community out there, right? Whether it's online or in person. How much time are we spending preparing a video to explain some sort of ahkam, the amr of the Ahlul Bayt? How much time are we spending creating a vlog to export the culture of Islam? How much time are we spending on any such activity? Another issue that we face here is that we expect people to come to us. I'm giving a majlis. You must come to my majlis. I'm doing such and such event. You come to us. The seerah of the Ahlul Bayt, generally speaking, and what the Quran teaches us is the opposite. We have to go to the people. Look at Surah Yasin, a surah that we recite so often. How often do we stop and contemplate about it? It says, وَجَاءَ مِنْ أَقْصَى الْمَدِينَةِ رَجُلٌ يَسَعَى. Visualize it with me. Think about it. A man came running, the Quran says, from the furthest part of the city. He comes running amongst the people and he says, Ya qawmi ittabi'ul mursaleen. He says, oh my people, follow the messengers. Visualize it. He's coming. He's talking to the people here. Allah doesn't talk about the other people in that qawm. He doesn't talk about the others. Did they go to heaven? Did they go to hell? No. Allah says about this man, this individual, وَقِيلَ دُخُلِ الْجَنَّةِ. It was said, you enter Jannah. Just very quickly, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that every time you reach a reward in the Quran, and Allah mentions a reward, we should stop and contemplate about it and ask ourselves, how do I gain that reward? If we had stopped here, we would see that the way to gain the reward is to be like that man. When, dear brothers and sisters, are we going to go down into the midst of the people? This is the seerah of the Ahlul Bayt. We've heard it so many times. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, Saluni, saluni, ask me before you lose me. To the point where a man mocks him and says, you tell me how many hairs are on my head. The point I want us to contemplate on here is that look, Imam Ali was amongst the people to such an extent that he was willing to be mocked, willing to be attacked, willing to be insulted by the people. Are we doing the same? Now, again, this can be in person or through the media. And I salute all of those brothers out there and sisters who are out there in Fazaya Majazi, in the social media forums, where you are speaking and you are trying actively to spread and strengthen Islam, because you know precisely what it means to be attacked by the enemies, to be mocked for your statements, to be attacked in every way. But if we don't know what it feels like to be attacked, to be mocked, how can we say that we are following the seerah of the Ahlul Bayt? How? We've convinced ourselves, dear brothers and sisters, that tabligh is not that important. You talk to some brothers, they openly say, I'm focusing on studies right now. I'm focusing on studies. I say, good. We need to focus on studies. Imam Khamenei says, Bayad ba sawad bashid. باید درس را بخونید، باید ملا باشید، درس را جدی بگیرید. This is absolutely true what the Imam says. Imam Khamenei, he says that you have to study this. And for those who are familiar with the words of the leader, in this speech he's addressing Tullab. And he says that همین منطق مضفر را بخونید، همین صرف و نحو و همین فلسفه، همین فقه و اصول. All of these subjects, it's a blessing from Allah. Not only as revolutionaries do we have to study these things, but we have to become mullah. We have to become experts in these fields if we are truly following Imam Khamenei. But sometimes what happens is we forget the context. And Imam Khamenei, even in this speech of his, explains the concept. Before he says, Bayad dars ra jiddi begirid, before he says, Mulla bashid and all of these things, he mentions the context. And what is that context? Ta'sir guzari. Effectiveness. He says the more you study, the more effective you will be. We've taken the juziyat, we've taken the study part, we've forgotten the reason why. We've completely forgotten it, we've brushed it aside, dear brothers and sisters. And there's some who are listening and they're thinking that no, we have an I do tabligh once in a while, that's not good enough. We have to reach 7 billion people in the world before the Dhuhr of Imam al-Hujjah happens. When is it going to hit us? The most important verse of the Holy Quran in this regard, especially for us as Hawza students, is the verse where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells us, some people have to disband from the others. And they must go لِيَتَفَقَّهُ فِي الدِّينِ, that they may gain deep understanding of the religion. What does the next part of the verse say? Because the next part answers the why. It says, لِيُنذِرُ قَوْمَهُمْ إِذَا رَجَعُوا إِلَيْهِمْ, so that they can warn their people when they return to them. We've taken the study part, we've forgotten the warning part, we've forgotten the teaching part, we've forgotten about the tabligh. Learn, that's what we've been told, learn. Oftentimes, the reason and one of the main barriers for why our tabligh is not being effective is fear. And thus we come to the third wheel. How does fear shape the way that we do tabligh out there? The first thing I want to say in this regard is that people, unfortunately, have become sheep. Sheep people. We refer to them as sheeple. Why? Because sheep need a sheep dog to keep them in line. You notice farmers, they have sheep dogs. And they tell the sheep dog to go in one direction, and then the sheep run in the other direction. And through the sheep dog, the farmer can keep the sheep controlled. Humans are worse than that. Why? Because we keep each other in line. What do I mean by that? You'll notice that oftentimes, when you've approached any form of tabligh, the awliya or shaitan, the agents of the taghut, have been nowhere on the scene. No CIA, no FBI, no MI6, no intelligence agencies whatsoever. It's other people who keep you in control. It's other people who you assume to be your brothers in faith, your well-wishers. You assume to be your friends, but they're not your friends. And what they say to you often is, be careful, don't say this, the CIA is watching. Be careful, don't get into politics, the FBI is watching. Be careful, the police. Be careful, this. Be careful, that intelligence agency. Be careful, be careful. And so you become so afraid, you just don't want to say anything at all. Remember this, dear brothers and sisters. The Quran gives us a golden rule. It says, إِنَّمَا ذَلِكُمُ الشَّيْطَانُ يُخَوِّفُ أَوْلِيَاءُ. It is only and only the shaitan that makes you afraid of his allies. Dear brothers and sisters, if you see that there are so-called friends, so-called well-wishers, who are constantly making you afraid of those agencies, you should know that those people are actually speaking the words of shaitan, whether they know it or not. This is the reality. This is the reality. Okay, and these people, they are nothing but fear mongers. They're making you afraid, and they do it in the name of intellectualism. Unfortunately, they use Islam, they use Islamic concepts, they use taqiyya to justify their own fear. And through it, they make others afraid as well. This may be part of the wisdom behind why Imam Khamenei says, Tarsuha haq nadarand, harf az aqlaniyat bezanand. The cowards have no right to speak of intellectual manners. He also says that in defending Nizam-e-Islami, in defending the Islamic system, heech taqiyya nakunid, sari bashid. Don't do any taqiyya. Be firm, be immediate. Tell them how it is. Sometimes, this is when the taghut is not involved. Sometimes the taghut does get involved. Sometimes the taghut and the agents of taghut do attack. Sometimes our brothers get imprisoned. Sometimes they character assassinate some of our respected teachers. Sometimes we get shaheeds among us. Sometimes they attack us in other ways too. When this happens, these same pseudo-intellectuals come along and say, see, they got attacked. They made a mistake. If they had been with us, they would never have been harmed. See, one of our brothers gets harmed. They say, oh, see, they did something wrong. If they had been doing the right thing, they would never have been harmed. And this is nothing but pure hypocrisy. Pure hypocrisy. Look at what the Holy Quran says. Dear brothers and sisters, respected elders. It says, وَمِنَ النَّاسِ مَنْ يَقُولُ آمَنَّا بِاللَّهِ. And among men is he who says, I believe in Allah. فَإِذَا أُوذِيَ فِي اللَّهِ جَعَلَ فِتْنَةَ النَّاسِ كَعَذَابِ اللَّهِ. And when they are harmed in the way of Allah, they make the fitna of men like the adab of Allah. Now this is going to take a little bit of explaining. On the one hand, you have the fitna of nas. You have the attacking, you have the banishment, you have the character assassination, you have the imprisonment. On the other hand, you have adab of Allah. This is the punishment of Allah, that somebody who is deserving of it will be punished. When our brothers are serving the cause of Islam, they are out there strengthening Islam with whatever means they can, and the fitna of Nas gets involved. The Zionists attack them, for example. The media attacks them. They're imprisoned. They become shaheed. They get attacked. These pseudo-intellectuals, instead of saying, this is the fitna of Nas, this is the Zionists, this is the enemies of Islam. Instead of saying that, they say, ah, this is the adab of Allah. This is the punishment of Allah because they made a mistake. They were foolish. They talked openly about Islam, and we're not supposed to do that right now. Therefore, they deserve to be attacked. The Quran is telling us that this is hypocrisy. Hypocrisy, that's what it is. In fact, Islam tells us the complete opposite. It tells us that if you wish to be effective, you should be angering the taghut. It's our role if you want to be a mu'min. One of the signs of a mu'min, according to the Quran itself, is لِيُغِيذَ بِهِمُ الْكُفَّارِ. They anger, they become such that they infuriate the taghut. Imam Khamenei gives the tafsir of this verse. He quotes this verse and then he says, agar ma didim raftar ma juri ast ke dushmanan din, dushmanan Islam, dushmanan hakimiyat Quran nisbat be ma ناراحت نیستند، خشمگین نیستند و از وجود ما ناراحت نیستند، باید در مفید بودن ما شک داشته باشیم. He's saying the opposite here, dear brothers and sisters, respected elders. The very opposite. He's saying, if we are seeing that our raftar, our behavior is such that the enemies of Islam are not angered by us, they're not infuriated by us, they are not in any way irritated by us, we have to have shak. We need to be doubtful about us being useful or not. Unfortunately, what we see is that some people are being trained to try in every manner possible not to irritate the taghut. And let me tell you, they're actually being trained to be useless. It's sad. Whether we should laugh or cry, I don't know. I can see a brother laughing. I can see another one frowning. I don't know whether to laugh or cry, but is this not the reality? There are many other such fears which stop us from doing effective tabligh out there. There's fear of not being good enough. There's fear of making mistakes. Fear of people. Fear of what people might say or think. Fear of family. Fear of not having enough knowledge. And fear of my sustenance, for example. Number one, all of these such fears are like rats. Rats are scary. They bite. They spread diseases. But there is a wolf in the room, and that wolf is the taghut. If you can draw the sword and slay that wolf, these rats become nothing. And so it becomes integral and vital for us, not only for tabligh, but for our own spiritual development, to overcome the taghut in our hearts. فَمَنْ يَكْفُرْ بِالطَّاغُوتِ وَيُؤْمِنْ بِاللَّهِ فَقَدْ اسْتَمْسَكَ بِالْعُرْوَةِ الْوُثْقَى. Right? Second thing, each one of these fears has a catch. You're afraid you're not going to be knowledgeable enough. You're afraid your knowledge is not perfect, and so I'll only do tabligh when my knowledge is perfect. Your knowledge will never be perfect. I'll only do tabligh when I become a perfect individual. You're never going to be perfect. Ever. And thirdly, unless we overcome these fears, you will never be able to overcome and recognize your own potential. And thus, we come to the fourth and final wheel. Unleash your maximum potential through tabligh. How do we do this? There are three points here. Number one, we need to recognize the blessings of Allah and be thankful for them. Allah has given you a tongue. Allah has given you intellect. Allah has given you teachers. He's given you Islam. He's given you the Ahlul Bayt. He's given you the Quran. He's positioned you in the holy city of Qum. He's surrounded you by teachers. He's given you everything, and he's given you technology. A phone in your pocket right now, which if you so wish, you could actually use it right now to spread the message of Islam. Inna hadaynahu sabil imma shakiran wa imma kafura. We have guided him to the path. He may be thankful or he may be unthankful. Secondly, you need to find your talent. Not everybody is really good at public speaking. If we're not, we have to improve our public speaking skills. The only way we're going to do that is by practicing. But it's not just about public speaking. You might have musical talents. You might have writing talents. You might have artistic talents. Managing a team, you might have the ability and comedic abilities. Activism, you might know how to perform effective activism. Find your talent, dear brothers. I see you in front of me right now. I know that you have many, many, many hidden talents. وَمَنْ يُؤْمِن بِاللَّهِ يَهْدِي قَلْبَهُ. One who believes in Allah, Allah will guide his heart. And the third thing is to reach out to your family, to your friends and strangers, people who you don't even know. And for God's sake, find the problems that exist in society and address them. People out there are truly suffering. They're being swamped by LGBT issues. Our youths out there are going towards drugs, going towards alcohol, going towards haram music, being infested by evil ideologies. They're suffering with immense depression. Oppression is taking place. People are dying out there. They're dying of thirst, of hunger. And the Quran tells us, إِن تَنْصُرُ اللَّهَ يَنْصُرْكُمْ وَيُثَبِّتْ أَقْدَامَكُمْ. If you help the cause of Allah, He will help you and make firm your feet. Don't look at what others are doing. Worry about that water which Allah has given you in your truck. Don't look at this public speaker. Let me see if he does it, then I'll do it. Let me see what the other Hausa students are doing, then I'll do it. Let me see what the other sisters are doing, then I'll do it. No! Allah is going to ask us, each and every one of us, about the water that we have and whether we did our best to get that water out there to the masses. That's all it takes. I hope, inshallah, to conclude that we have established, number one, that there is a true deficiency and confusion in the Shia world when it comes to tabligh. Number two, that the Quran, the Sunnah, the Ahlul Bayt, and even the leader of our time are calling for tabligh. Number three, that fear is holding us back and we can overcome those fears. And number four, that you can unleash your full potential through tabligh. Now the question is, what will it take for us to see that we have a role? Is it not enough, dear brothers and sisters, respected elders, that somebody like Shaheed Malcolm X was riddled with bullets and his wife was left crying and screaming over his bloodied body at the foot of the pulpit where he was preaching to the masses? Is it not enough that we have such great muballighin and ulama like Shaheed Beheshti, like other shuhada, like Shaheed Mutahari himself? Is it not enough that somebody like Shaheed Qasim was blown to smithereens by the Taghut and all that was left of him was his hand with the aqiq ring, a sign of a mu'min? Is it not enough that our Mawla Imam Hussein alayhi salam was trampled into the dirt of Karbala under the hooves of the tyrants of the time? Is it not enough? And because our discussion is not complete without some dhikr of Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein knew that those who he was addressing before he was trampled, before the atrocity of Karbala took place, he knew all too well he's the Imam of the time. He knew that they are not going to listen. He himself said that their stomachs are full of haram. Oh Hussein, why did you go and warn them anyway? Perhaps Hussein alayhi salam knew that it is the duty of Islam incumbent upon us to tell them whether they listen or not. Let me take you back now to the desert of Karbala. I want to take you to one of the most painful moments. The tents of the companions of Imam Hussein are buzzing with the dhikr of Allah. All the companions are reciting the Quran. But there is one tent which is shining with such a light. Imam Sajjad is in his bed. He is wrought with sickness. He is unable to help his father. He is unable to strengthen Islam. The servant of Hussein is sharpening the sword of Abu Abdullah. He is preparing the armor of Imam Hussein. At a certain point, Imam Hussein recite some poetry. Imam Sajjad knows that the noble Imam is announcing that he will soon leave this world. But Imam Sajjad is not concerned with himself. He looks across the tent at his auntie, Sayyida Zainab. Sayyida Zainab calls out. She says, how can I bear this?
Oh, my brother Hussein, when my grandfather Rasulullah left this world, I comforted myself saying, I still have my father and mother. When Fatima was crushed behind the door, I comforted myself saying, my father Ali is still here. When my father's head was struck with a sword in the masjid, I comforted myself saying, I still have my brother Hassan. When my brother Hassan left this world, I comforted myself saying, my brother Hussein is still here. And now you are telling me that you will soon leave this world. Hussein tells his sister, oh sister, you must be patient, for I will leave this world. You must remain to spread the message of Islam. Imam Hamine says that if it were not for this noble lady of Ahlul Bayt, the message of Karbala and Islam would have been buried in the dirt of Karbala. Ya Rasulullah, how mazloom is Islam that a lady of your pure household must bear the burden of spreading your message. But the most painful moment is when Imam Hussein was surrounded by enemies in the battlefield of Karbala. His blood had left his body. He is surrounded by faces of evildoers. They are approaching from every side to slay the Imam. They are given the command to finish the life of the noble Imam. He is lying there in the dirt of Karbala. And they begin to approach. But they say that every time someone approached the Imam, they would turn away in shame. For it is said that the Imam continued to invite them towards the Rahmah of Allah. Even in those final moments, a man comes to Hussein with his sword drawn, ready to slit the throat of Imam Hussein. Imam looks at him and says, you look like the noble companion of Rasulullah. You look like Bilal. And the man turns away in shame until the worst of the individual comes and slits the throat of the noble Imam. The most painful lines that I have read in the Maqtal says that Imam Hussein, even in those last moments, was still speaking, and in the middle of his sentence they cut his throat. وَسَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلِبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ بِسْمِ اللَّهِ الرَّحْمَنِ الرَّحِيمِ أَلَمْ نَشْرَحْ لَكَ صَدْرَكَ وَوَضَعْنَا عَنْكَ وِزْرَكَ الَّذِي أَنْقَضَ ظَهْرَكَ وَرَفَعْنَا لَكَ ذِكْرَكَ فَإِنَّ مَعَ الْعُسْرِ يُسْرًا إن مع العسر يسرا فإذا فرغت فانصب وإلى ربك فارغب.
I would like everybody to raise their hands in dua. Oh Allah, whatever difficulties the mu'mineen may be facing, please get rid of those difficulties. Oh Allah, whatever hurdles and obstacles that we face in our spiritual development, oh Allah, remove those obstacles from our way. Oh Allah, wherever the shaitan is attacking us, mentally, physically, spiritually, oh Allah, repel that accursed shaitan from us. Oh Allah, help us to gain more knowledge and to become experts in whatever field we choose to specialize in. And oh Allah, help us to recognize the importance of tabligh, to recognize our talents.
Allahumma kun li waliyyika al-hujjat ibn al-hasan salawatuka alayhi wa ala abai fi hadhihi as-sa'ati wa fi kulli sa'ah waliyan wa hafidan wa qa'idan wa nasiran wa dalilan wa 'ayna hatta tuskinahu ardaka taw'a wa tumatta'ahu fiha tawila برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين.